We are back to item number 13 now on our agenda. And this is direction concerning any further action regarding the court order CRA versus Story County and Comstock Mining. So I'll let Mr. Maddox kick off on that one.
Okay. As you all know, I think you've all got copies of the decision. On April 24th, the district court down in Carson City entered an order on cross motions for summary judgment. A real quick summary of that was, is the court, Story County's always taken the position, or has taken the position for the last several months, that we didn't have authority to regulate the use of a state highway. The court found that we did. That was one important finding. And then the other finding was, is it upheld the action we took at the meeting amending the SUP. It's your decision as to whether or not you want me to appeal the adverse decision on our authority to regulate the highway, and that's basically the direction I wanted from you, if you wanted me to appeal that or not. That's all I have to say.
Okay. I'll open it up. I believe Robin Cobby is going to speak for CRA. No, Robin Cobby is going to speak for CRA. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down, please. No, I don't want any from you. Is Robin Cobby here? Robin Cobby. Where is Robin Cobby? Where is Robin Cobby? Well, didn't I just see her here a bit ago? Well, then I made arrangements for her to make a presentation as the chairman or president of CRA. Okay.
Her statement is.
All right.
All right.
Not our problem.
Well, they're entitled.
Now, if you have. Hang on a minute. So if you have. Hey, no comments from the gallery. No comments from the gallery. All right, so who's next in charge of CRA? Who's going to speak representing CRA? You're going to come up? All right. A little bit of protocol would be certainly appreciated.
My name is Gail Sherman. I'm speaking on behalf of the CRA. The Story County Commission in 2000 and 2004 put a condition in the mining SUP currently being used by Comstock Mining that specifically prevented the industrial hauling of ore on the highway. This was a protection for the residents and public, and the Commission felt it was necessary. Condition 5 simply stated that the hauling was to be done on the haul route. Plum Mining obtained a right-of-way from the BLM to use this road. The requirements for a right-of-way from BLM changed since then, now requiring that a new right-of-way be obtained. In the fall of 2011, CMI applied for the right-of-way, but then withdrew it. In the summer of 2012, the company attempted to use the haul road without a permit. They were cited for trespassing and issued a cease and desist from the BLM. CMI then asked the county to amend the SUP to permit industrial hauling on Highway 342. The public opposed this change at the Planning Commission, which voted 3-2 in favor of the amendment and was then approved before this board last year. The Commission ignored the public's wishes and concerns in favor of the mining company's wishes and concerns. Rather than simply remove Condition 5 from the SUP, the commissioners embraced District Attorney Maddox's mistaken opinion that it was illegal. They quoted it often during the discussion and then voted to surrender their authority. Our position was and is that Condition 5 was perfectly legal and was put into the SUP to protect the community. That's what this lawsuit was about. Twice now, Judge Wilson has ruled in our favor. First, he denied Story County's motion to dismiss last November. This motion argued that the court should dismiss the suit because CRA failed to include NDOT as a party. In rejecting this motion, the court found that Condition 5 of the special use permit regulates Comstock Mining's use of land. The condition does not regulate Highway 342 and does not impact NDOT's control of Highway 342. After this ruling, CRA offered a settlement in order to save the county time and resources. If the county would acknowledge that Condition 5 was legal and within its authority, we would drop the suit. Our attorney made the offer to D.A. Maddox, who refused to discuss it and rejected it outright. In the summary judgment issued 2 weeks ago, the court again found Condition 5 legal and well within a county's authority and responsibility to protect the residents. The court states Story had authority to impose the no use of highway condition. Lawsuits take time, and over the course of this one, CMI got a temporary right-of-way from the BLM, and now the trucks are off the highway. But that doesn't make this lawsuit moot. The company's use of the haul road is temporary and conditional and can be terminated at any time by BLM. We believe this is a solid win for the county. Your authority over mining activities has been affirmed. It's a green light for you to mitigate the impact of mining on the health and safety of the public and the national landmark. One way to do that is to reinstate Condition 5 to protect the public from industrial haul traffic on the public highway and through residential neighborhoods. It would show good faith to the residents and might restore this to this body some of the public's confidence that has been lost since CMI appeared in our midst. We recognize that this is a different board from the one that acted previously, and we want to go forward with you in a more productive way than has been possible in the past. Our interests are the county's interests. Thank you.
What do you want us to, what action do you wish us to take then?
Well, what I said in the statement was to reinstate Condition 5 to protect the public.
Does CMI wish to rebut?
Corrado de Gaspers, President and CEO of Comstock Mining. I would just like to say that the entire incident resulting in us needing to come to the county and ask, you know, for the use of the state route, which cost the company over $3 million, cost the county a tremendous amount of tax revenue, and cost the residents disruption, is saddening, disappointing, and overall unfortunate. In addition, there's countless versions of stories about how this all occurred. There's mistakes that we believe we had incurred in our journey to do the right thing, but just overwhelmingly, we don't see a sincerity, you know, from the comments from the CRA. We just don't see it. We think that there's an absolute and almost explicit effort to shut us down. We were working collaboratively with the BLM on every level of government. We had gotten advice to put in color of title requests, to put in right-of-ways. The BLM was completely uncoordinated. The BLM's local office had horrific internal documentation. We got direction from the state in one way, from the district in another way, and then a new manager came in, and through a tremendous amount of technical interference, we were knocked off the haul road. No one that we've spoken to believes that the way that we were knocked off on the haul road was proper. I never said we did everything perfect, but practicality did not ensue. And I don't believe that this issue was served well for the county, us, or you, or the residents. There's a lack of collaboration despite our absolute best efforts to be responsible. We're going to do more to be responsible. But they just don't want us to be here, right? And we've taken always the high road, just to work with the county and do its best. We have no intention of using the state route. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to repair it, hundreds of thousands. We get no acknowledgement for that. We don't market that. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to be responsible, to improve the community, and to move forward. Could there be a circumstance where the need for the state route occurs again because of some kind of interference? Possibly. Would we ever use the state route in an irresponsible way? No. Would we ever use the state route without first asking the Planning Commission or the Commissioner's approval? No. We would do the same thing that we did last time. So, and then to have to go through a lawsuit, county get sued, and then we have to be involved and we have to spend more money. There's a much more practical way, you know, to work together than doing it in conflict and in court. And I just think it's extremely disingenuous when people are on record saying they just do not want us here, period, in any way, shape, or form. So, thank you.
Thanks, Ronald. Any comments from the commissioners or district attorney?
David wants to speak first.
Yeah, I'm asking if staff had any comments.
Did you have a comment? Were you going to speak, David? Yeah, come on up.
Come on up then. Sorry. Thought we already had this agreed upon. You don't want to honor the agreements.
My name's David Toll. I live in Gold Hill. And Corrado just accused CRA of trying to shut them down, CMI down. And obviously, there is no way in the world we could shut CMI down. How could we? We're asking them to follow the rules. That's all we've ever asked. And it's not that we don't want you here under any circumstances whatsoever. Go underground. We'll be the first ones to help. My comment has to do with the surprise I felt when our district attorney mentioned a concern over being sued by NDOT on account of the haul trucks on the highway issue. And I was troubled that someone from NDOT would call to complain about it. The supposed gentleman's agreement between CMI and the county didn't last long, but it was intended to mitigate the negative impact of industrial truck traffic on the highway. Trucks would only run from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on weekdays, and not at all when there was ice or snow on the road. Those would be covered, and perhaps there was even another aspect or two. But why would NDOT call to tell us, to tell anyone, not to cover the loads on ore trucks? I called Scott Magruder, who is NDOT's public information officer. He thought it was very unlikely. He thought it was very unlikely that NDOT would get involved in a gentleman's agreement between two other parties, and doesn't know who might have called. We don't go around suing, he said. So we called Bill Hoffman, the NDOT deputy director, and spoke to his assistant, who said it was very unlikely that NDOT would take any official notice of a county SUP. The assistant to Rudy Malfabon, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, he's the director of NDOT, also told us that it was unlikely anyone from NDOT would call a county district attorney over an issue of this kind. Catherine Thayer, the deputy AG assigned to NDOT, said that as far as she knows, NDOT has never sued a county over a provision in an SUP. Well, I'm satisfied that NDOT doesn't care, doesn't trouble itself over conditions set down in a county SUP, much less over an unenforceable gentleman's agreement. So I'm thinking that either someone at NDOT got way out of line, or that it was a prank call, and that someone was pulling your leg. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? Any other comments from anyone on either way? Then I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that the chairman direct the district attorney to take no further action regarding this court case.
Okay.
Leave it be.
I might add to that motion, if I may.
Certainly.
That no further action on the court case unless the other entities choose to move forward with other litigation.
Very well. I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All righty. Good enough. Okay. Next one up is item number 14 is cause statements required under NRS 244-225 and NRS 354-210 to be published to the Comstock Chronicle dated May 10th, 2013.
This request was made by Mark Joseph Phillips, and Mr. Phillips is here.
Well, unless there's any more comments on it, Mark, we'll probably just go ahead and do that, huh?
Exactly.
I say we'll probably just go ahead and do it, but what is that in the dark to? On the budget,
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mark Joseph Phillips. Tuesday, May the 7th, 2013, agenda item number 14. I'm asked the county commissioners to cause the statements required in NRS 244.225 and NRS 254-210 to be published in the Comstock Chronicle, dated, well, it'd be this coming Friday. 10th of May, 2013. This is something I've been working on for months now, and quite a bit of correspondence to the commissioners and Mr. Hugh Gallagher. In the meantime, becoming more and more of an expert about what I was even asking for, and Hugh. He worked with me yesterday. I wasn't entirely happy about what he had for me yesterday, but I got to say that right now, I'll be happy just to get something published that's required to be published, and we'll go from here. And I'd like to thank the commissioners for listening to me, and I'd like to thank Mr. Gallagher for taking me seriously. And I'll add that last week I was down in Carson at Committee on Local Government Financing. I showed them the agenda. I told them how happy I was that I got your attention, and assured them that your cooperation was important to me. So thank you.
Well, thank you for representing the county. We appreciate that. We'll put you on the unpaid lobbyist list.
Early. Financial statement. Yes. Okay. And he was talking about the past if he had to get it through the.
So I guess we'll.
Mr. Chairman? I was just informed I read the statute wrong into
well,
the record.
We have it right here.
Okay. 354.
Motion to.
Thank you.
Looking for a motion.
The only comment that I'd like to make is I recall that Mr. Gallagher has been reviewing and researching and looking at doing this for us for some time. And he was working with Sales Tax Authority in the state of Nevada to perfect the proper forms for the reporting. And he had told all of us that he was going to do that as soon as such was at hand. And I believe I'm right on that. And so I think it's probably proper time to do this now.
Yeah.
I know tax, Department of Taxation didn't have their stuff together on a lot of this either.
That was my understanding.
Yeah, so.
Mr. Sheriff, I could ask our comptroller just one question. Are you ready? Because the May 10th edition of the Cron is, the deadline is very close. Are you, you're able to make it?
Do you have a comment, Jeff, on any of this? Do you have a comment on any of this stuff, Jeff?
No, I don't, because I haven't seen anything yet.
You do have the,
Mr. Chairman, the March quarterly, the financial statement for the period ending 3/31/13 will be on the website, hopefully by tomorrow. It will be in the paper by the 10th, as required. And Mark's right, this is a, this has been a document that when I first heard about it, because we've never done it, and I mentioned it to him yesterday, and I asked the Department of Taxation last year if they could give me a sample so I could start getting compliant with this thing, and they didn't have one because nobody else did it either. Now, that's not an excuse, but it's like, okay, let me know what you want me to put in here. And unfortunately, we've gone through this a thousand times, and there's an NAC that shows us what to do. Is the report a good report? It's average, but this is what the legislature had decided. This is what the Department of Taxation had interpreted, and so consequently, this is what we're getting. I've got stuff into them to say, you know, can we do it a little bit differently? Because, you know, the information that is provided, you really, Mark wants it by fund, which if it was by fund, it would be a greater document. I think the legislature at that point in time, plus the Department of Taxation's interpretation of this, was it to be a one-page document. Unfortunately, it's one of those that does not include any of the enterprise funds, but includes all the rest, and it is kind of what it is. We've done as much as we can do to get as many occurrences and acceptances from taxation. This document is, I believe, to at least the letter of the statute, and I would like to see it probably change, but it won't change soon because it has to go through government and local finance, and essentially through the legislature. They're going to have to change that. So, but we will have that out by Friday.
Thanks. So, motion to publish then.
I'll make a motion to cause the statements required by NRS 244.225 and NRS. Can't see it because my eyes are blurring up this time of night. 354-210 to be published in the Comstock Chronicle, dated Friday, May 10th, 2013.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, recess, and we'll reconvene as the 474 Fire District Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable board members. I'm just going to quickly go over a document that's in your commissioner's packet dated April 17, 2013. And unfortunately, I don't like to bring bad news to you, but this is one of those cases where it is.
Did we recess?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did.
We're now a 474
board. I want to make sure that you think right. Yeah.
This is one of those things where we've just been advised that we're within our annual subscription program. The program essentially has to balance itself. The revenues must balance what expenses we write off each year as losses. We are not currently doing that. We're potentially in violation of a couple federal laws, the False Claims Act and the anti-kickback laws. The anti-kickback laws specifically state that no tax dollars or billing dollars can be used to offset your losses. In a nutshell, this last fiscal year, we collected $5,500 in revenue. We wrote off $20,000 in ambulance subscriptions. So using round numbers, that's about $15,000 that that program is losing or writing off per year.
We either up the fees or...
Yes, sir. That's really the two options. I don't personally like the option of dealing with the program altogether. The proposal that I would put forth is, no one else in this region has a senior rate. Currently, our senior rate is 55 years or older, and that's $10 for the entire household. What we would propose with our existing number of subscribers would be to increase that to $25 per year and $10 for each additional household member. And we would also propose elevating that senior discount rate from 55 to the Medicare rate at 65 years old. That's one part of this overall proposal. For non-seniors, we currently charge $25 per year. Our proposal would be to increase that to $40 and $10 for each additional household member, not to exceed $75 per year. In comparison, if you're a household of two people, you'd be paying $50 a year. If you were a resident subscribing in North Lyon County, they don't do it that way. It's $65 flat fee, period. That's it. Central Lyon County, Remsa, Carson City all charge $75 per year. So we would at least never be higher than any of our regional cooperators at a maximum rate.
Now, if we could get a buy-in from our employees at TRI, are they eligible to buy into it?
Well, that's going to be at your discretion. I'll get to that in just one second.
Live in the county?
Well, can I just throw out two more quick things? And there are a couple other important things that I need your approval for. Is currently we allow people to subscribe that don't have insurance. That's the beauty of this program. If you don't have insurance, you're writing off the entire ambulance invoice. We would propose that they would still be able to become subscribers, but they would have a $200 copay in addition to the subscription program. At least that's going to bring in some additional revenue to increase up to that $20,000 mark, which we feel we need to pay up. And then the last one's probably not going to be happy or very popular with most everybody that works here, but we would recommend not providing car blind coverage for county employees any longer. So I'll be hated for that one, but business is business, and we are in violation of the law. That kind of gets to the last thing, and with those changes, we believe that we will generate about $21,000, which should be sufficient. We have to break even or generate more money, more revenue in the ambulance subscription program. We would also like to go into a study year and potentially open this up to resident or employees that work within the county. So this could potentially open up another 4,000 workers in TRI, thereby spreading out our lost ratio potentially to more subscribers. The more subscribers, the more revenue, the less loss we feel that we're going to have. And the other nice part of that, too, is that subscription would only cover them while they were driving Story County to work, while they were at work, and while they were driving home. So if you're an 8-hour employee, we wouldn't cover their families, only the employee. But if you're an 8-hour employee, we're also minimizing our risk on that side. They're here maybe 10 hours out of the 24-hour day. So we're further trying to lower our risk potential there. And that's our proposal in a nutshell.
Yeah, go ahead. Chief, I can't envision this, but let's say we had a set of grandparents that had grandchildren responsibilities in the as a resident. You put a $75 cap on non-seniors, but we have no cap on seniors. Would you be willing to adjust your A recommendation to also provide for a $75 cap?
Yeah, and if it doesn't do that, that was an oversight. The intention was it would be $75 cap for anyone.
That was consistent with what we knew.
Yeah. And that would be based on the head of household. We had to define that as well in the program. So if the head of household is a senior, they would pay the $25 plus $10 for each additional member. So it would be based on the head of household. If the head of household was under 65, then they would be considered general membership.
And this is consistent with what the chief and I have talked about, and again, he went to great lengths, the $200 copayment for folks that don't have insurance
We looked at all the other service subscription programs out there. RIMSA won't even insure,
no.
as I recall.
No.
So, you know, he's, even though we're having to raise fees to be compliant with federal laws, we've still tried to make it as limited as possible and leaving the door open with these new employees countywide. So you have 4,000 in trying. You probably have another 50, 60, 70 up here in Virginia City. So.
Right. Well, and I just want to mention, too, I've received some emails about this, and this is not about the revenue. This is about not violating a federal law. If we violated this law, and I could read it to you out of the OIG interpretations, but bad things happen. You can lose your entire ability to provide ambulance services. You can lose your entire ability to charge for those services. I could go to jail. It's my name on it.
Well, if it comes down to that, I'd kill the program before breaking the law.
Well, and I'd like to go forward with your approval to look at these rates for this next year. If we can get more members, I would propose we lower the rates back down next year.
Let me pose a question here to the general. How many of you have the county ambulance? You have it, Mark, Janet, Gunther, Pat? If we kick the rates up that much, would you still be a buy-in on it?
Yeah.
Yes, would be.
Definitely a buy-in?
And it's cheaper than Lyon County. Lyon County is a good work.
Bill,
I mean,
I've never used it. I've used it four times in
the Yeah, year. I know. Annabelle used it.
Well, this program, again, it's not about the money. I started this program my first year as the fire chief. This is something I've been passionate about. This kills me to increase these rates. This was never the intent of this program. The intent of this program was to provide a quality service and an affordable rate for our local citizens. I don't like having to come here and ask you to do this. So, again, it's not a revenue generation. It's a legal issue.
My son cut his fingers off at my house in Utah. It cost me $9,000 to have him taken to school.
Yeah. I've seen my, not for me, but I've seen for family members on helicopter bills.
It's cheap.
Right, yeah, and rotary wing air trip to the hospital is about $15,000.
Yeah.
With our paramedic services, we fly less than a handful of people a year now. As opposed to before we were ALS, and Marshall Shipping is dead. He knows. He was a volunteer here. We'd fly 50-plus people per year.
Back then, it cost less than $1,000, too, when they started that program. It was cheaper to use the helicopter when they first started than it was to use a ground ambulance.
I had, I think, one year we called on the one boy six or seven times the helicopter and out of it.
There is one more thing that I'm sorry I didn't highlight and I missed on my notes is if you approve this, we'd also submit it to you in your packets, but we'd also ask that non-program members with outstanding invoices for EMS transports would not be allowed to join the program. We have some patients that have several outstanding invoices and they've never even joined the program. So we would ask you to not allow those people to be program members.
Might be your only way to get some money out of them. By letting them join.
Yeah, we're working with our collections agent closer. Remember we negotiated those percentages down?
Well, it sounds like the general consensus here is that the folks wouldn't mind bumping the pay up a little bit if we have to. Janet, yes, go ahead and pop up to the actual floor.
I have a few questions. I just understand, you just mentioned about the individual that do not have insurance but able to subscribe, right?
Correct.
Okay. Can you tell me how many people do not have insurance but subscribe?
I can't. I had all that, and I'll apologize. I had our administrative assistant here with all that information after 5 o'clock. I don't think you want me paying her overtime to stay here.
Okay.
I could have.
Okay. So you mean to say that the losses that you have here, I'm just trying to understand in these situations. I hope you have some patience for me on that basis. So these losses is actually incurred for those people who have no insurance but use the services?
No, for nope. Everyone. That's our entire write-off for all of our subscribers, with insurance or without insurance.
Okay. Now, Is this part of these losses, could it be part of the contractual discount? So that means to say you have a standard billing by the federal or by the state, where I'm not very sure. So you give it to me a bill for 900 something, as you stated, if ALS is 1,000 plus. Now this is the standard rate. But when you deal with the insurance, when you do a claim on the insurance, all right, then they have a contract figures. Now I have to pay a co-payment. I subscribe that. I do the subscription so that I can reduce. I just want to save my co-payment on that basis. It helped me. Yes, it's a good program. I agree that it's a very good program. I encourage a lot of people too on that basis. My question now on that losses, you see, when you submit to the insurance, my insurance, they have a contract figures. So when you have a billing of 900 plus, the contracts agree by the insurance that I'm going to pay $600. The insurance agreed with you all, I'm going to pay $600. So the discount is 300. Is that 300 part of these losses?
I think kind of drifting off the agenda there.
No. It's not very important. It's just a clarification.
I think what you're saying is when we bill an insurance company and say it's a $1,000 bill, and the insurance company pays $800.
Right.
And whatever your copay would be $200 of that. That $200 that's not paid by the insurance, that's the remaining balance that's your copay, that's the loss. The insurance payment cannot count towards revenue towards the annual subscription program. Cannot do it. It's against the anti-kickback
law. Right. So that means to say your losses is that $200. So if I losses, your losses is $200, but if I pay my subscription, your losses is actually $175.
Correct.
Correct?
That's exactly right.
That is what I'm trying to say. But my question is one thing is that I know a lot of insurers, even the ambulance or medical side, when you have a contract, when you bill them, they usually have a discounted rate itself.
We do not have contracts with any insurance companies. We will not enter into contracts.
I do not know. So I'm asking.
Now I know.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
No, we won't do that because it's a lose-lose situation.
Okay. Another clarification I just like to find out is that you just mentioned about the employee for the TRI, and is it correct, as I heard, it only cover during their working hours?
Correct.
It will not cover when they are off hours at home or families. They are not covered on that basis. Am I right?
No, we can't cover those. Those are franchise areas.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever they live, if they're not residents of Story County, the franchise for Washoe County is RIMS, the franchise for Carson's Carson City, Fernley's North Lyon County. We cannot go into those franchise areas. No, we will not do that. It's only at the time that they're at work.
Okay. I appreciate the clarifications. The last one I meant to ask, because we did go back and forth on our email, basically, that you make a suggestion of proposing that $25, $10 for the senior, you're going to increase $25 plus $10 for each members. So you didn't mean to say 25 is the initial and then the number of members in the household. So if there is two senior, they are going to pay $45.
No.
Is that how it is? 30,
no,
35.
So for example, if my wife and I, she's much older than I am, don't tell her that. So if my wife, if I'm over 65 and I want to cover my wife, I'm the head of household, I pay $25 as a senior. If my wife's under 65, I'm still only pay $10 for that person.
Okay.
And the way that was calculated, and we tried to get it down as low as we possibly could and just span that gap. And we went down and we did statistical analysis on, we have about 400 members. We broke that down to how many are seniors, how many are non-seniors, and then how many are in the households. That's how we did it. That's how we set that rate. So it wasn't just pulling it out of a hat. It was actually statistically analyzed, saying, this is how much we need to generate. This is, if we have this percent of seniors doing it, we need to have it at this rate. And I would strongly, again, encourage everybody, let us have a year at these rates. if we generate more than we need, we'll drop the rate back down. We're not here to try to make money on this. We're just here to meet the law.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Sure.
All right.
Are there any other questions I can answer?
I don't. Anybody else have anything?
No, Gary and I went over this in depth.
Well, it certainly appears to me if we're in violation of federal law with the possibility of sanctions or serious repercussions, then I think it behooves us to approve this program for you if that's what you believe it needs to put us on the right track. And so I would say I want to support this.
Okay, is that your motion?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll second.
No,
there's no motion. Okay.
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much. I appreciate that. My wife, that's a lot older than me, is going to kill me if I don't go down and pick up my child.
Get out of here. You'll make the peace.
We got to do now.
All right. We are going to adjourn then as the fire board and go back into regular county commission meeting, and next thing up is community development and planning. Item number 18, special use for the Conn Virginia Company. And, we lost the principal.
You already gave up on us, huh? What's going around out there?
What do we got going?
All right, Mr. Chairman. I'll go ahead and get started on this. What I planned on doing was providing a very brief background of what, where, why, and when, and then hand it over to the applicant here, Susie Lawyers representing Huey Marshall, in this project, and to let them explain exactly what the project is about, what they'll be doing, and then I'll be here afterward to explain any questions you may have, and then also to go over findings and those sorts of matters. So really what we have in front of us is an application by Conn Virginia Mining Company to do a two process mills. These are skid-mounted, temporary, modular type of units that would be placed on site at the Sutro mine. And the Sutro mine is just about a mile or a mile and a half north of here, kind of down in the canyon at the head of Seven Mile Canyon. So we're looking at two mills that would be about the size of, you know, two small tractors, and then they would sit inside a 4,000 square foot Quonset hut kind of
type mine.
It's a small operations mine per our code. So in this particular case, we're getting a special use permit only for the milling, because the milling's required to have a special use permit in the forestry zone, and that's under 1732.020. For the mining portion, per our 1792 mining code that we now have, he has a small operations permit that he'll be getting from me in-house. So there's no special use permit, no planning commission, none of that stuff, and it'll be separate from this. And so he'll get that, and it'll have conditions to it that are very similar to the conditions we're recommending here for this special use permit. And kind of a key element of this thing is to be important of is redundancy. I formulated text in this special use permit, as well as in the draft small operations mine permit, to make sure that whenever there is a requirement in both, that one or the other counts. So you'll have to have $1 million indemnification insurance, for example. You'll have that condition in both the permits. You will not have to have $2 million, either this one or this one. If one says two and the other one says one, you'll have to have two. And so really that's what we have on here. This mine and this processing is on less than 5 acres. Because of that, that's why he's a small ops permit. And in fact, he's all underground mining, so he's exempt under a lot of things there as well. So at this point, I'd like to pass it. Go ahead and let the applicant come up. She has some things to explain, and then I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Ms. Lawyer.
Yeah, well, be careful. CRA will be after you go pretty quick.
She's underground.
Anyways, my name is Susie Lawyer.
We're only going to approve this on one condition.
What is that?
We get a tour.
Well, my first question to you would be, are you MSHA certified?
Are we what?
Yes.
Okay, my answer then would be no, you would not have a tour of the mine underground. Sorry. Anyways, for the record, my name is Susie Lawyer. I'm employed by Hugh Marshall. How should I say this? I work for HRM Enterprises, which is our administrative company. Con Virginia Mining is one of our affiliate companies. So Mr. Marshall, unfortunately, did get ill after sitting here for a while. And needless to say, so I'm up here going to wing it the best I can, although I have been involved in the process. Mr. Marshall started this whole process back in 1999, 2000, had actually incurred all the permits, got all of his agency permits. He got his water usage or water rights to drill the well and such. So we are basically revisiting and reapplying for all those applications that are necessary. This is definitely, as Austin explained, is a pilot test plant. He has done extensive work since 2000 in assay works in determining the ore body, the what we're referencing as blue clay material. So he is going after that material right now that is in the adits, in the Sutro mine or in the Sutro tunnel. Has had Jim Noble, who is with AAA Manufacturing, has designed the equipment or the temporary pilot mill that we are putting together to process this blue clay material to again determine what it's capable of producing for us as, you know, a small miner. It is all intended to be very green, very friendly as far as low water usage. It is a gravitational flow circuit referenced as a closed circuit, which means we capture and clarify filter water back in to the holding tank. So we're basically circulating all water that's being used, except for anywhere from about 5 to 10% of the water, of course, will be lost due to evaporation, retained in some of the remaining products. So we are, again, because it is a pilot plant, we'll be assessing the whole process as we go. But the initial design with Mr. Noble's help has been to retain a very conservative, very efficient portable plant. That is, I guess, the gist of the whole. We have the two plants right now. The first plant is what we are wanting to build, which will go under a approximately 40 by 100 temp, what we would consider a portable building, which will be a metal building that we can tear down, break down, and move to another site, of course, retaining all of the applicable permits for that. And, of course, as you know, condition, but no matter what our conditions are, have a profound amount of entities that we have to receive other, of course, permits from. Okay. So that process is all turnkey. I figure that this is our stepping stone. We have to please our commissioners first before we go and approach all the other agencies with whatever our conditions are going to be.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Well, we're trying, working hard at it.
Good. Findings of fact, conclusions of law.
Okay, there's just a few things I'd like to bring up here. There's some conditions in here. I'm not going to go through them all unless you would like me to, but this is a less than 5-acre operation. The water that's going to come into the plant, Mr. Hilroy, or Mr. Marshall, has applied to the state engineer's office for approximately a quarter acre foot of water. He'll do a domestic, well, it won't be a domestic well, but it'll be a well at the site. It's about less than it would be used for a residence. In this case, the access, we've worked with the fire district, with Mr. Haynes and his staff, on making sure that access is clear and understandable and meets the requirements of the fire trucks and those sorts of things. We're good there. We're looking at about the kind of vehicles you have here, probably about 2 pickup trucks a day with 5-gallon buckets in the back of them with cake, and the cake is really what's going to come out of these processes. What's that?
Commercial pickup?
Pickup, like just pickups.
Right, 3/4 ton, 1 ton, yeah. Residential.
Mr. Marshall will.
Too small or too big?
Per our new mining ordinance, he'll have to complete a full operations plan like you would see with a large mine on a BLM land. It'll have to have all the emergency stuff and all of his reclamation and the bonding for reclamation. He'll have to reclaim the site back to existing conditions. and you'll have to deal with lighting. There's a residence nearby about 600 feet. The residence has been notified even by phone, and the lighting will be, dark skies will not apply because there's exemption for this kind of light. He will not be exempt. He'll have to downward direct it, and it's a discharge facility. And so, in this case, if you're ready, I'm prepared to read findings or answer any more questions you may have. I know we really...
The only question I think I'd have is there any objection from the resident in the neighborhood?
We have not had any objections, and the Planning Commission approved this unanimously, except for the two that were absent, and there was no contention or anything.
Those two pickups bother me. I know they'll be back in court again. Serious.
Okay, it's going to be a golf cart then.
Okay. I guess we're ready for findings and conclusions.
I know the findings are our favorite part. Oh, okay, if you want to go ahead and read them now. So here we go. I'll just take a deep breath and go. The motion for approval, remember, if it's a motion for denial, it'd be one of these, doesn't apply. The following are found to be factual regarding the proposed special use permit under the recommended conditions of approval shown in subsection 9 of this report. A motion for approval should include a motion or a minimum of these findings and may include other findings deemed appropriate and factual by the body. Here they go. A. Story County Code, section 1732020N, subject to a special use permit is what it's called, requires a special use permit for milling and processing related to the mining in the forestry zone in which the operation under the special use permit is located. B. Special use permit number 2013-003 does not regulate mining and extraction. Mining and extraction may take place concurrently and at the same location as the milling and processing under the special use permit. Story County Code Section 1732020M provides that mining and extraction are allowable uses in the F zone, but they are regulated pursuant to the provisions of Story County Code Chapter 1792, by which the small operations permit is required. C. The conditions of special use permit number 2013-03 are not in conflict with the purpose, intent, or other specific requirements in the forestry zone in which the project is located. D. The proposed project and final conditions it creates will not conflict with or cause substantial adverse impacts to surrounding existing land uses. E. The conditions under special use permit 13003 are at least as stringent and non-conflict with the applicable federal, state, and county regulations. The minimum requirements under Story County Code Chapter 1703 administrative provisions for special use permits are applied to the conditions of this SUP. The conditions of approval under SUP number 2013-03 impose sufficient regulations on the proposed project to reasonably mitigate associated impacts on the surrounding environment and closest land use. And I should add, G, the Planning Commission has approved this, and this motion would be compliant with its recommendation.
Is that it?
Yes. If a motion is made, I'd just like to add the language in there. There is language proposed on page 16 that has an actual motion set up for you.
Do you have the actual motion there in front of you, either one of you?
It's against page 16 of the staff report.
Do you have any comments?
Yep.
Come on up.
If you need it, I can get it to you. I have
public comments or republic comments or...
Actually, I do not know where is this place, but later I found out it's somewhere on the Highway 80. Am I right? No? It's in Macquarie area?
No, it is actually more called 7 Mile Canyon.
About 10 miles north of here.
Way north.
It's in a canyon.
Out of town.
Oh, out of town. All right. I'm just curious that I heard that you mentioned about the well. That when you water water, you're supposed to dig a well for that process, right? Now, what is the county level of waters? Because we know that a lot of areas, we have a water shortage. So my question is that, what is the level of our Story County at this moment?
Mr. And how much have the right under the state engineer's office to drill a well and extract 2 acre feet of water, such as you do down to Mark Twain for domestic use? He's looking for a quarter acre foot.
Okay. So is there some sort of measurement of limitations, or can they use any amount of
that's
wells?
That's 1/4 acre, a foot deep.
A
and
quarter acre?
So a typical residence uses 2 acre feet. He's using much less.
So they have a meter on that basis?
A meter, and they have one that you don't have.
Well, I'm just curious because of a lot of county area, our county, you have a lot of water problems. That's why I'm just raising a concern on that basis.
Let me tell you, this water that they're going to be in has got a lot of problems before it ever comes out of the ground.
I heard that somebody was proposing that, so I'm just wondering. Thank you.
It's a nominal amount of water we're talking about here.
Okay. 16.
Okay, thank you.
We're ready for a motion.
All right. I'll make the motion.
Okay.
Just a quick comment. I really appreciate this, and I believe this mining operation 5 acre sets a nice standard in our community.
Yep.
And it's really in keeping with all of the issues and disciplines we've looked at over the past months and for the title program. And my platform chose to support underground mining here in our community. And so it's in keeping with my platform, and I appreciate that very much. So I'm prepared to read the findings.
Okay.
Can I borrow your glasses, Bill? Thank you very much. Fitzy. Recommended motion based on the findings of fact. Recommended motion based on the findings of fact shown in subsection 8.1, conditions of approval, shown in section 9, paren, IX, of this report, compliance with federal, state, and county regulations, and the recommendation for approval by staff and the Planning Commission, I motion to approve SUP application number 2013-003 to allow placement and operation of 2 portable temporary ore processing mills for the processing of local ore from the subject property as described in the submitted application, and for the temporary placement of a shelter to house the processing mills.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, now, we'll expect to see the first 1,000 ounces of Doré in 2 weeks from today.
Yeah. You're in business.
Don't forget to take your delivery of your mill at Hope Bean, Virginia City.
So yes, a copy of that. And it's cheaper. It's cheaper here. Have everything delivered here. We'll get you there. Oh, Colony Energy, item number 19.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I believe on this action item that I will recuse myself.
Okay.
In as much as I'm involved with TRI. And this affects a property sale that we're currently processing within the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center.
Very well.
So if I may, I'll excuse myself.
Will you seat yourself there?
Bench here.
You can probably start, Austin.
Chairman, Commissioners, I'm going to take a similar approach on this. We have highly qualified individuals here representing the applicant. So in this case, we have a liquid natural gas cryogenic company that's coming out to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. It's about a 224-acre site, and what they're going to basically do is cool natural gas to a point where it, through a cryogenic process, it'll increase its density up to 1/600th of the what it normally would be. And I'll let them explain what the intricacies of that are. I do want to cover a couple things that are really applicable here. It's very important to note that this is in the I-2 zone of the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. Tri-Center has not adopted the 2012 Story County Code Title 17 zoning. So what we're working under here is the 1999 zoning, and we're going to be working under 1737-040 in this particular case. So we're kind of going back to the old zoning as applicable to Tri. The old zoning is part of the Tri Development Agreement. And I'm sure we know on this board that nothing in the new codes or any new requirements of the county applies to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center until they accept those. There is also a portion of this facility that's located in a forestry zone that's outside of the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. So for that portion, we're going to be applying the 2012 zoning ordinance. And that part really deals with a storage tank, and a storage tank and the special use permit encompassing this would allow that use to take place in the forestry zone there. And that would be really for that and buffer uses. So there are other things to discuss. I'll let the applicant come up and discuss those, and I'll be here to answer questions. Thank you, Mr. Griffith.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Vincent Griffith. I'm with Reno Engineering Corporation, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. With me today is also Matt Smith with Colony Energy Partners, so he will be able to answer any questions that you may have as well. I'm going to speed through this considering the length of the meeting that you've had so far. We're absolutely willing and able to sit here and answer hours of questions, but rather than do a big presentation for you, I think we'll just speed through it. Basically, what I wanted to go over is we're very proud to find a group that wants to invest upwards of $90 million in the county. We think they're an excellent company for Tri-Center. They're tailor-made for Story County. They're a green energy business. They're making liquid natural gas. We're taking that pipeline right from the power plant and just liquefying that to be sold for cleaner-burning engines. So the second point I'd make is that I think we've done a very good job with Austin and the county and Dean and the applicant to find the right site for this facility. So this is right just south of ARC. It's up on the road. In fact, directly in line, if you're on the freeway, you might see them in the distance behind the power plant. So they're not next to Toys R Us. They're not next. I mean, we've done a good job of finding the right location for them. And third, and lastly, and again, I'm really speeding through this, but I think Austin and Dean's staff has done an excellent job of papering this project. I mean, you can see the conditions and you know Austin's abilities as well. But I think in this, he spent the extra time and he looked through it and talked to the applicant. I'm fortunate enough to be part of the team to do this project, and Matt has assembled a team of people. I know they call in every Tuesday. We have a conference call. I'm not sure how spread out over the country they are, but they are the experts in their fields. I've worked on a lot of projects out there, and I've been surprised at these guys coming up with codes I didn't even know existed, and you know, the separations to the foot and where it is and the temperature and the time of day, and it's amazing, and I'm impressed that this group is putting this together. So this is not a group of guys that thought, hey, woke up one day and said, let's look for natural gas, and we've never heard of it before, and we want to try this out. They've really assembled the right team. And so we thank staff, and we hope that you approve the project as submitted, and we look forward to building this thing.
And, Austin, I think, sent us a pretty good detailed overview of everything. Mm-hmm.
Chairman, commissioners, and residents, I'd just like to say we appreciate the opportunity to have this development, and appreciate your consideration and approval of the project. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have about the process and what we're doing, and go from there.
Matt, could you, before you leave the podium, could you just read your full name into the record?
Yes, I'm sorry about that. That's Matt Schmidt. I'm VP of Project Development for Colony Energy Partners.
Does Ted Williams come with this, too?
Hmm? What's that?
Ted Williams.
Ted Williams, huh? I guess it's too late. I'm lucky I didn't go home sick.
They're just sick of us, is all.
Okay.
Now we're happy to have you guys on board.
Yeah.
This is exactly what Story County wants. Is a company like yours coming into the park.
Well, I tell you, even today, the gentleman speaking about trying to convert to natural gas here in Virginia City, and actually, I'm going to be connecting with him and proposing a step process where you can build a mini grid in steps and use LNG that we can truck in. We just have a skid mounted portable supply, and it's pretty simple, and then you can build it out as you got the funds to do it and the permitting, because it's a big project to say I'm going to build a mini grid and a pipeline extension lateral all the way to Paiute. So LNG in Nevada has a lot of applications, and we're excited to be able to provide this.
And you did get Pulse contact information? So
I did, yes.
Okay, I was just going to ask you that if you...
Yeah, we're going to start looking at that, because it's definitely a solution that it's being done in remote areas that are stranded, and this could be a potential application.
Pretty good application, too, down in Lockwood. And we already have the tank set up and everything else, and just convert that over where they get that lower fuel cost. That's already metered and everything.
Is that natural gas or propane down there?
They're propane. The gas system and everything else be the same. Your infrastructure's always been in.
Right. Great. Austin has some more findings.
Yeah.
Take a deep breath.
I'm happy to answer any questions or other things, but I think the staff report now does make it very clear.
For me, it was pretty simple. If you want to go ahead and straight into findings and conclusions.
There's a set of findings on page 11 of your staff report. There's a whole bunch of them, so I know we're going to really enjoy this. So I'll go ahead and read them, and then I'd ask that these be recorded into the record as part of a motion. So here we go. We're on page 11. Motion for approval. The following are found to be factual regarding the proposed special use permit under the recommended conditions of approval shown in subsection 10 of this report. A motion for approval should include these findings. A special use permit for the proposed use under special use permit number 2013-002 is required pursuant to Story County Code Section 1737-040-1999, I-2 Heavy Industrial Zone, conforms to the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center Development Agreement, including the resolution of similar uses, page 11, and approved by the Story County Board of Commissioners and accepted by the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center as provided for in said development agreement. We understand that, right? Good. The regulations and entitlements contained in the 2012 Story County Zoning Ordinance do not apply to portions of the subject land zoned I-2 Heavy Industrial and located within the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center because the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center has not accepted the 2012 Zoning Ordinance as provided for in the development agreement with Story County. Therefore, the regulations and entitlements in the 1999 Story County Zoning Ordinance, including the resolution of similar uses, do not apply to said subject property. Portions of the subject property zoned F forestry are not located within the boundaries of the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center. Therefore, the regulations and entitlements in the 2012 Story County Zoning Ordinance do not apply to said subject property. And the regulations and entitlements in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center Development Agreement, including said resolution of similar uses, do not apply. A special use permit for the portions of the proposed operation under special use permit number 2013-002, which will take place in the F forestry zone, is required pursuant to Story County Code Section 1732-020-2012, F forestry zone. The proposed facility, when conforming to the conditions under SUP number 2013-002, will not conflict with the purpose and the 10 other specific requirements of the I-2 heavy industrial zone in which the principal processing facility and its ancillary uses are to be located. The proposed facility, when conforming to the conditions of SUP number 2013-002, will not conflict with the purpose and intent or other specific requirements of the F forestry zone in which the cryogenic storage tank, utility lines and related apparatus, and the buffer area will be located. The principal processing facility will not be located in the F forestry zone. The conditions under SUP number 2013-002 are at least stringent and not in conflict with the applicable federal, state, and county regulations. It's recognized that pursuant to the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center Development Agreement, the regulations under Story County Code 1703 Administrative Provisions, as adopted by the Board of Commissioners in 2012, do not apply directly. However, it is recognized the conditions under this special use conform to the purpose and intent thereof to protect public safety and area properties. The conditions of approval under SUP number 2013-002 impose sufficient regulations on the LNG processing and distribution facility to reasonably mitigate associated impacts on the surrounding environment and the closest communities. There's your bedtime story for tonight.
Are you done?
Yes.
Thank you. Best of all, that could be so you don't have to get over there.
You know, he types as fast as he talks.
Wow.
Watch. So there is a set of, there's a recommended motion, and that is all set up if you'd like to just read it verbatim. It's set up, and the Planning Commission did unanimously approve this, except for two absent, and there was no public contention or anything like that.
Marshall? Turn to public comment. What do you want me to do first?
Any public comment?
No. Okay, Mr. Chairman. I move to recommend this motion based on the findings of facts shown in subsection 9.1 and condition of approval shown in subsection 10 of this report and the recommendation by staff and the Planning Commission. I motion to approve SUP application number 2013-002. To construct and operate a liquid natural gas processing, storage, and distribution facility and its ancillary uses.
I'll second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Why don't you have to abstain for the record, Commissioner Gilman?
I announced that before.
He did.
Abstain.
Thank you for choosing story time.
Check, guys.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, welcome aboard. Glad to have you.
How soon can we get them on the tax rolls?
Yeah. be sure once again, Matt, to take delivery of all of your equipment, FOB Story County or McCarran, yeah. Nevada.
Okay? Absolutely.
And then work with Dean's office on
here, Matt.
Sales tax,
yep.
Reporting.
Yep. Thank you, sir. Yeah, hope definitely will do that.
Yeah.
Okay,
we'll be out in a week or two to look at the thing while it, when it's up in operation.
You got it.
Okay. Go for it.
All right.
On item MOU between Story County and Dayton Valley Conservation District, item 20.
Okay, Mr. Commissioners, this is a very simple one. This is the fourth year that Story County is engaged in a collaborative agreement with the Dayton Valley Conservation District with help from the Carson-Truckee Conservancy District. In this case, the project is for weed abatement. We took in 6 Mile Canyon originally and portions of 7 Mile Canyon is to eliminate Whitetop and Hoarycrest. If you were to look at that canyon just 4 years ago, that's all that existed was cottonwood trees and Whitetop. And so we thought, let's give it a try and do some spraying in that area with their help. And the first year was great, and the second year was amazing, and now it's gone. And you go down there now and you see native grasses and sagebrush and things coming back. And really all we're doing now are just little spot sprays. So because it was a success, we expanded the project to include most of Virginia City, particularly down by the railroad in that area, and then also Gold Hill, American Flat, and Gold Canyon. And so that's what we did last year, and that's been a success. There's still more work to do in there. So essentially what we're doing here is the funding for this is all coming from the Carson-Truckee Conservancy District. I want to give kudos to Mike Nevin, our Public Works Director, who sits on that board and helps kind of help us out. And then that money then goes to us and we park it here, and then will you give that money to the Dayton Valley Conservation District that has the crews and the trucks and the equipment and the sprayers and all the things that you need to make this happen. We don't have that equipment or that capital. And we provide that money, in this case it's $16,000. Or $16,097 off all of it from Carson-Truckee. We park it and we distribute it. Story County is going to provide in-kind match, and that's mainly from me. I'm going to do all the weed mapping, which I did, all the GIS mapping, and then I go out there with Mike Nevin and we put the signs up, don't run over our crews, you know, on the highways. And then also we provide some fuel for me to do mapping, real simple stuff like that. And then also the property notifications. So each of you got that letter in the mail that says we're going to come and spray. That's part of what we did for our in-kind. So in this case, I really would like to commend the Dayton Valley Conservation District and Rich Wilkinson. He's been an amazing asset for us. This is a benefit to him as much as us. We get the riparian areas fixed, and he gets the seed load reduced for all the projects they do down on the Carson River. We're not sending hundreds of billions of seeds down to him to undo what he's done. So in this particular case, there will be an MOU contract. It expires at the end of this year. The project should be done on July 1st, and at that point, we start distributing those funds.
Pretty good. Cool.
If it's up to me, I'd say go do it, but Commissioner was here, I'll have to weigh in here on this one, too.
Great program. Ready to write into a motion? Any public comment?
Go for it. I don't see any hands up.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I approve to make a motion to approve the Memorandum of Understanding MOU between Story County and the Dayton Valley Conservation District, DVCD, DOE, Noxious Weed Abatement in 6 and 7 Mile Canyon, Gold Hill, Gold Canyon, Virginia City, and American Flat, Story County.
Second that motion.
Hoorah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
All right. Licensing board.
Commissioners, I ask you to approve all the second readings of business license A through J as meeting all the requirements.
Wow.
The ones come back from the studio, Jim.
Yes.
He came to me and he needed to get a business license to go get some grants.
Just good idea to jump in there on that. Okay.
What? Is this the one? There's a lot of businesses in here down there at KRI.
A lot of those are contractors and stuff.
I'll be glad to make this motion.
Okay.
I make a motion that that we approve the licensing board's second reading.
Okay.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Sheriff?
And cabaret.
We're looking at this just as entertainment licensing. The
no alcohol, just cabaret. That's not even, that's probably the only one we got like that, huh?
What's that?
That's probably the only one we got like that, cabaret without liquor.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. There'll be just in time for the new entertainment tax.
Yeah. Motion.
Move for the approval, second reading of the cabaret license for the Roasting House.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All righty, board comment, Lance.
You asking if you have any comments?
No, I don't have any comments.
Okay. Marsh?
I'm wore out.
Me too. We're done. Get the hell out of here.
I could take another half hour.
Yeah.